Good morning, welcome to week three of our verse-by-verse walkthrough, the book of Micah. Now, for those of you who weren't here the first couple of weeks, I'm going to do a real quick recap. Micah was an Old Testament prophet, and he starts his ministry at the end of the era of kings. So like the exile is, it's inevitable, it is happening. And so Micah is doing his best just to try to explain to the people why they're mad. And the main reason Micah says is that they began to love God. The people of Israel began to love God only for what he does. They don't really care for God for who he is. They just want God for what he does. And we're going to see that play itself out time and time again in the next chapter. So let's use... yeah. I'm hoping you guys are all like that when these are. So anyway, the thing is, let's go ahead and look. We'll use the leaders of Israel as our example. And because people then, just like people now, they tend to model their lives after their leaders. So be it our parents, it's Father's Day, be it our parents, our businessmen, who doesn't love Steve Jobs, our politicians, even our celebrities. I mean, don't tell me that LeBron James' stance on racism doesn't hold some sway. Or Lady Gaga's stance on sexuality doesn't hold sway. Like, we all have someone that we want to be when we grow up. That's something you ask your kids, oh, who do you want to be when you grow up? And then we kind of model our lives after them. Well, the people of Israel are also doing that. I mean, they're modeling their lives after their leaders. And this is how their leaders are behaving. This is Micah 3. Listen, you leaders of Israel, you're supposed to know right from wrong. But you're the very ones who hate good and love evil. You skin my people alive and you tear the flesh from their bones. Not literally, we're talking more in the financial, we're talking more in the moral sense here. You eat my people's flesh, you strip off their skin, you break their bones, you chop them up like meat for a cooking pot. Then, you beg the Lord to help you in times of trouble. Do you really expect him to answer? After all the evil you've done, he's not even going to look at you. Now, we said this a couple of weeks ago, but for a 3,000-year-old prophet, that feels like it's hitting like a little bit close to home in 2019. I mean, for the politicians, for the businessmen, for the leaders of Micah's time, it's not even gray matters. Talk about our series from April. It's not gray matters where they're getting confused. For their leaders, black has become white and white has become black. They're openly hating good and loving evil. And they say that they have God. They think of him at their award ceremonies. But they're really only using him as a pawn. Like, they don't really want God for who he is. They want God for what he does for them. And guess what? Where the leaders went, the followers followed. The people of Israel followed. And we have to remember, we have to learn, we have to continually be aware that who we choose to follow, we will tend to emulate. So if our leaders get to the point where they hate good and love evil, over time, so will we. If they get to the point where they warp the truth to fit their own desires, so will we. We should always continue to pray for our leaders, because as they lead, we are going to follow. Let's keep going with this idea of leaders. But let's turn our focus to a different set of leaders. The religious leaders of our time. Because, I mean, sure, obviously, we all know politicians, they're going to be corrupt, celebrities, they're not going to give us the best morals. But the church, that's where the good leaders come. That's where all the godly leaders are. Well, let's see what Micah has to say about our religious leaders. This is 5 through 7. And this is what the Lord says. You false prophets are leading my people astray. You promise peace, but just for those who will give you food. And you declare war on those who refuse to feed you. But now the night will close around you, cutting off all your provisions. Darkness will cover you, putting an end to your predictions. The sun will set, for your prophets, and your day will come to an end. Then your seers will be put to shame, and your fortune tellers will be disgraced, and you will cover your face because there is no answer from God. We have to be careful. We talked about leaders. We have to be careful who we follow. It is doubly so for spiritual leaders. We have to be careful who we're following, because there have and there will always be constant wave after wave of false prophets and false teachers trying to lead you astray. The ones who claim to be Christians, but then just kind of start to twist the Bible to gain their own following. They'll be saying things like, blessings of the church, who blesses me? And it goes back to a big question. Do they love God for what he does, what he does for them, or who he is? Are the church leaders using God? Are we using God for what he can get us, or for who he is to us? Because it's easy to love God when things are good, when things are awesome, when everybody's healthy and you're doing well with your wealthies. But what happens when things aren't all healthy and wealthy for you? What happens when life gets hard? It's going to get hard at some point or another. Do you love God for what he does, or for who he is? I'm going to give you an example of this. My friend Josh, I met him in Germany, and he told me about a time he got a new position as the lead pastor at a church about our size, about 80 people, down in Georgia. And when he got there, he met all the leaders, he met all their wives, and then he got up to preach his first sermon. And one of the leaders, his name was Steve, he came down and sat in the front row with a woman. And the woman wasn't his wife. And so Josh was like, okay. And so he went up and he introduced himself after church. And Steve was like, oh yeah, this is one of my friends from work, and I've been inviting her, and I'm just really excited she was able to come. And Josh was like, awesome, man, I'm glad I love this. Steve's inviting people. And he didn't really think anything about it. But then it happened again the next week, and the next week, and the next week. And it was always this woman, but never Steve's wife. And so finally, Josh was like, hey, what's going on with Steve? Why is he always sitting with this lady? And one of the other church leaders was like, oh yeah, no, that's his mistress. That's a bit of something to process as a pastor. And so, next obvious question, okay, how long has this been going on? Oh, pastor, it's been going on for years. Okay, why hasn't anybody done anything to him? Well, I mean, the thing is, that's, ooh, man, I'm having a hard time focusing today. He's like, why didn't anybody say anything? And they were like, well, the thing is, Steve was actually at a church before this. And the pastor talked to him about it. Steve ended up leaving the church. He took all his employees with him. Okay. And the leader said to me, go on, and he said, here's the thing. The reason that we were able to hire you is because Steve would come. So Steve gives about a quarter of our budget. It's a small town. He's a big-time giver. The reason we're able to hire him is because of Steve. So here's the thing. You can accept that everybody has sins, and this just happens to be Steve's. Or you can talk to him and just kind of see how it goes. Now, my guess is most of you guys know what the proper answer should be. You're going, that's easy. Just got to go talk to this guy. But I have to push back. It's easy to armchair quarterback this thing. When you're sitting out there, out of curiosity, how many of you guys do the same thing? How many of you dig into the people in your life about their sins? How often does that happen for you? Thought. You know, you try to pawn this thing off on the pastor, but the thing is, you're part of the family. You are equally part of the family that I am. And it's all about having a good relationship to have those hard conversations. So in reality, you should be talking to the ones that you notice it about. You should be the ones talking to your people in your small group. They're your close family. You should be talking to the ones who are co-volunteers, for your neighbors, for your friends, for your actual family. You see it. You have that relationship. It is your responsibility to dig into their lives. And if things go sideways, hey, I'm there for you. I'm there to back you up, to help you through this thing. But it is your job as part of this family to have those tough conversations. I want to add a little layer to Josh's. You see, Josh has a family. He has a couple of adorable little girls. And they just bought a house. The girls are getting settled into elementary school. And Josh and his wife are trying to pay off these massive seminary debts that are eating them alive. And so Josh goes to his deacons. He's like, what do I do? And they're like, well, the thing is, if you confront him about his sins, I mean, are we going to do it with every single person? I mean, all of us have sins. Or how minor do we want to get with this? That's not quite the response Josh was looking for. So he goes to his elders. And they said, Josh, look at it. I mean, think about it. Our church is growing. Think of the money. Think of the volunteers that Steve brings in. We can make the church even better. We can see more salvations come. We'll just put that on the back burner. And after some prayer, Josh decided he would still talk to Steve about the issues. And guess what happened? Steve broke down. He started crying. He changed his ways. Josh kept his job. The church grew like crazy. Saw hundreds of people get baptized. Except, that didn't happen at all. Steve was furious. He raised a huge stink in the church and got everybody super upset. He left the church. He took his employees. He took his money. Then the church couldn't afford to pay Josh, so Josh had to end up getting another job, and he did the church on the side. Because Josh couldn't invest as much, the church began to shrink. And the church resented Josh because the church was growing 40K. And dealt with trying to deal with this issue because he has a minor sin issue. And Josh dealt with it. They resented him to the point that Josh had to quit altogether. Then he decided he needed to join the military to pay off his seminary debts. And last time I talked to him, Josh was in Afghanistan. He was away from his family, he was away from his little girls for 12 months, and he was getting shot at by terrorists. That's what Josh got for his faithfulness. I want to walk this idea back. Have to ask. You said, man, this is easy. Josh knows what he's got to do. The choice is easy. Knowing the consequences, are you willing to make the same choice? Are you willing to make that call in your life? If you saw that somebody was doing something they weren't supposed to be doing, do you love God for what he does, or for who he is? And the temptation is always there for pastors. I can tell you, I love this job. Like, I really do. It is amazing to see people, like, get plugged into the church. Get plugged into the family. It is just mind-blowing to see people spiritually grow in ways that they never thought that they could. And it is, I'd say, the best feeling in the world to see guys like Geller, see guys like Cam, who it's like they finally get it. They finally get who God is, and they invite him into their lives. Like, I love this job, but I can tell you, it is an exhausting, nonstop barrage of emotional, mental, and spiritual assault. It is a constant struggle to keep your eyes on God and not lose sight of him for a single moment, no matter how difficult that is, no matter how unpopular that can make you. And the thing is, the devil is so clever. You guys know that as well as I do. He makes things sound so close to what you think God would probably want you to do, but you start to lose your sense of direction, especially in this society where everything is very results-based. But what is results-based? It means you're basing what you do on what God does and not on who God is. Not on who God has told you to be. And the thing is, the first couple times I read this, I was reading Micah, and I'm like, come on, guys, like, shame on you. Shame on you for being that way. But then I think about my life. I think about all the churches that I've worked with around the world. And it's just like, I can see how quickly they got there. I want to give you a couple of examples of how quickly a pastor, how quickly a church can become disoriented. And then just by little things here and little things there, you just turn into a false teacher. Pastors are constantly pushed on their preaching. And most of them are pushed on not challenging people too much. Because, you know, it makes people uncomfortable. Seeker-sensitive is the hot word. Seeker-sensitive has become the motto of most churches. You hear things like, Pastor, you need to just lay off the heavy stuff. Just a little bit. You make it a little fluffier. Water it down just a little bit. You know, if you'll do that, more people will come. And if more people come, more people hear about Jesus. And that's what we want, right? That's what we want as a church, the most possible people to come and hear about Jesus. You find yourself sitting there thinking, I've had so many conversations with pastors who are like, how do you argue with that? Like, how do you argue with wanting more people to come to your church and hear about Jesus? Maybe you shouldn't do that series on Micah. Yeah, you compromise your teaching just a little bit, though, but more people are hearing about Jesus. And it's about the numbers, right? As many people as possible. It's about the results. But it's a small step in becoming a false prophet. How about another one? A fellow pastor, he sits you down, and he says, hey, I've noticed that the church down the road, it's growing a lot faster than you guys are. Now, they're a little more easygoing on church involvement. They said, hey, it's okay to be a casual Christian. Just come sit in the back. You don't have to connect in any way. And pastor, you got to understand, this is not a culture who commits to anything. You keep trying to do this whole, we're a family, we should act like a family. And you want people to go to a small group, and you want them to volunteer, and you want them to give and pray for each other and greet new guests and come to church regularly. But look at it. We're not growing numerically. And look at those guys down the road. I mean, clearly they're doing something right. And I can tell you this. I have been at hundreds of churches helping them out. There is always a church down the road. Doesn't matter where you are, doesn't matter who you are, there's always a church down the road. And it's tough to argue with. And you especially struggle with the decision as you watch their attendance soar and yours stays the same year after year. And you start thinking, well, maybe I should just kind of lay out this whole we're a family thing. It's only a small compromise, and I might actually get us some better results. It's another small step in becoming a false teacher. Then you're like, you know, I need a break. And you go to a conference. And there's this wonderful pastor there from Phoenix. And he's in downtown Phoenix, and he's telling about how he grew this church from 0 to 3,000 people. And with his new book, you can learn how to do it too. And you know deep down that a church in downtown Phoenix probably doesn't work the same as a church in downtown Petoskey. But they're still growing. They're planting churches. They're seeing baptisms. They're making millions. And your church is struggling to pay the rent, get your salary, and keep the doors open. And you start thinking, you know, maybe Pastor Phoenix has got a better plan than the one I thought that we were called to. But would it really hurt just to give it a try? You change a little bit. You change a little more. And a little more. And choice by choice, your ministry turns into a distorted version of what you were called to do. And you start to lose your path. But the thing is, you're still up here. You're still preaching. You're still leading the church. It's just you've lost your way, and now you're leading everyone else in the wrong direction. And they're following you. Because as the leader goes, will follow. You've become the guys in those verses. You've become inadvertently the false prophet. So as a pastor, as a leader, as a Christian, for me and for you guys, it all boils down to this question. Do you love God? Do you follow God for what he does? Or for who he is? I can guarantee you Micah, way back then, felt the same pressure. He saw the easy life those other guys were leading, living in their nice big houses. They had the camels with AC. Everyone was speaking well of them. Then he compares it to his life. He's not doing well financially. He's extremely disliked, and eventually he has a death-filled career. And he had the same choice to make. Same choice you have, same choice I make. Do you follow God for what he does? Or for who he is? Here's what Micah chose. This is verse 8 through 12. As for me, I am filled with the power, with the Spirit of the Lord. I am filled with justice and with strength to boldly declare Israel's sin and rebellion. So listen to me, you leaders of Israel. You hate justice and you twist what is right. You are building Jerusalem on a foundation of murder and corruption. You rulers should make decisions based on bribes. And the priests, you only teach God's law for a price. Your prophets won't prophesy unless they are paid. Yet all of you claim to depend on the Lord. No harm will come to us, for the Lord, he's here. Now, because of you, Mount Zion will be plowed like an open field. Because of you, Jerusalem will be reduced to ruins. Because of you, a thicket will grow on the heights where the temple now stands. Micah did not read How to Win Friends and Influence People. And you're looking at this and you're thinking about my friend Josh, and you're thinking about Micah, and you're going, I thought it was a blessing to follow God. Where's the blessing here? And honestly, sometimes following God is the blessing. I mean, really, why do you need more of a blessing than the blessing and joy of just following our Creator? Isn't it enough to love Him for who He is? Or are you just following God for what He does for you? Because you're sitting there and you're thinking, hey, I'm going to get a blessing. Following God means I'll always have enough money to get by. Not true. If you think you'll always have food on the table or a roof over your head or a shirt on your back, that's not always true. It's a sneakier version of health and wealth that is prevalent even in this church today. I have heard it a ton of times. If you think that God will make sure that late bill is covered by a check for the exact amount at the last moment that comes mysteriously in the mail, because you love God, and God will always bless you with that thing. It's not always true. That's not Christianity. That is karma disguised as Christianity. And sometimes, God does bless you with those things. I look around at you guys, you are extremely blessed with good families, with food, with a car, with friends, and fortunately with clothes, because it would have been awkward here today. Thank Him for that. Thank Him so much for the blessings He's given you. But you read through the Bible, and you test your Christian commentary. Test it with some Old Testament guys. Test it with Peter, who loved Jesus more than anything. Test it with Paul, who was more faithful to Jesus than just about anything. I mean, test it with Jesus himself, for crying out loud. Your Christian karma theory bases your love for God on what He does, not who He is. And if your relationship with God is based on what He does, or what He did do, or what He didn't do, what you've done is you've turned God into a magical genie. He's Robin Williams. You rub the lamp. He pops out, makes snarky comments, and he grants your wishes. Or, if he doesn't, then you doubt him. And you hold bitterness because he didn't do things the way that you wanted. Your life didn't turn out the way that you think it should have. The trick is, if you love God for what He does, it changes the whole dynamic. Loving God for what He does, it puts you in charge. And it makes God follow you. So God gets your love if He jumps through your hoops when you want Him to do it, how you want Him to do it. But loving God for who he is changes the game completely. When you love God for who he is, that puts God in charge. And it makes you follow him. You see, what God does is different with every single person. But who God is doesn't change. Numbers 23:19. You gotta understand, God is not a man, so he does not lie. And he is not human, so he does not change his mind. I mean, has he ever spoken and failed to act? No. Has he ever promised and not carried it through? What God does is intentionally designed to draw you closer to him through the good times and the hard times. Who God is does not change. It never has, and it never will. The question that you have to ask yourself is your relationship with God built on what he does or who he is?